Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 14 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. This week, Comic Timing gets its geek on as Peter Rios of Comic Geek Speak stops by to discuss the ramifications of being a comic geek. Are there times when we hide our true colors, or do we let our geek flag fly? Also, David Price makes an announcement on his future plans as the Man of 1000 podcast hints at podcast number 1001. And last but certainly not least, we announce the winner of our iTunes art contest. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 14 of Comic Timing. Well, I should have listened to Christopher Niesman the last time around and just skipped episode 13, as there were some audio issues with the second half hour of episode 13. However, we have fixed those. I've learned my lesson, and whenever anybody drops out of a call, we're just going to stop dead and get on back. But nevertheless, I am joined, as always, by the Man of 1000 podcast. He is David Price.
Hello.
Hello, hello. And joining us today is a man from one of the most popular comic podcasts out there, Comic Geek Speak, found at comicgeekspeak.com. Also, the guys who are gracious enough to be hosting the forums for Comic Timing. Peter Rios from Comic Geek Speak joined us today. Peter, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
You're quite welcome, man. And, well, I figure that this would probably be a topic that you'd very much be interested in joining us for. And, well, the topic at hand is one that was brought up by our favorite guy, Braxton. And here is what he had to say. I'd like to hear everyone's take on the social ramifications of being a comic geek. Do you try and hide it around particular people? Do you cringe inside when your spouse brings it up around certain friends? Or you can replace spouse with other friends, considering that, two of us aren't married here, so that'll work there. I've become really comfortable in my comic skin, but only within the last 5 years. Earlier in my life, I was a closet geek. And I've certainly experienced that before in my life. So, well, straight off the bat, have any of us ever been closet geeks, as it were? Peter, I'll have to ask you that question first. I mean, have you always been out in the open with your being a fan of comics, or have you ever tried to hide it?
No, I've definitely had moments in my life where it was something that was to be hidden. It's only been probably in the last couple years that I've really started to embrace it, and especially because of this whole podcasting thing.
I can certainly agree with that there. What were your reasons behind hiding it?
I think the usual things, you know, that they would look at, friends or my family always knew. My family always knew that I was a big comic fan, and there were some friends who knew, but for the most part, if I was in a new situation, whether it was a new theatrical production or a new job or something like that, it wasn't something that I would put out there right away, or I would wait to see if I got any hints from any other of my coworkers or friends that maybe they would also be interested in that, or that they were interested in that, and then I would kind of bring it up. But it was sort of the kind of thing that was like, you know, I don't feel like having to defend my hobby or the reasons why I enjoy this hobby, so that's sort of why I kept it to myself.
So sort of just like sniffing out the crowd first before you go out.
Yeah, yeah.
I can certainly agree with that. David, how about you? I mean, were you ever the closet comic book fan?
You know, I was trying to think back, and I don't think I really ever was. My father would buy the newspaper, and I would, you know, and he'd show me the comics pages, so I'd always, you know, he always knew I was very into comic books. My grandparents in Massachusetts, when I would go to the newsstand with my grandfather and hit the spinner rack, so obviously they knew I was into comic books. My aunt, her law partner, his mother, used to go to flea markets and bring back bags of comic books, which my aunt would give to me. So everybody in my family knew. And in high school, I ended up becoming friends with three or four guys who were all into comics, and I knew that they were into comics because one in particular, we called him Inconspicuous Lad, because he'd slip some comics in between the pages of the textbooks in Spanish class.
And nice.
So I'd sit behind him and I'd see what he was reading, and then I knew who his friends were, so I introduced myself. And so, I mean, we were all into comic books together. So no, I mean, even at work, if I, you know, I don't cringe or kind of shy away if I I tell people my hobbies involve comic books, or my boss would ask me constantly 2 summers ago if I ever got around to finally seeing Spider-Man 2, and so everybody kind of knows what where my interests lie. So I don't think I've ever been closeted, and what's great is none of my relationships I've had to hide my hobby or whatever what I may have loved at the time. I pretty much, you accept me and you accept everything that I bring with me.
You are a lucky man, sir. You are a lucky man. That much I can certainly say, because there are a lot of folks out there who are a bit less accepting of, specific hobbies, if not for, the social stigma that comes with them, or just the fact that, they're frowned upon for some reason that,
yeah.
To this day, I really don't understand why there's any sort of frowning upon being a comic book fan in the first place. I mean, it's just another hobby, it's just like, collecting bottle caps, or it's a lot more fun than collecting bottle caps, that much I know, because you can't read a bottle cap. You can read a comic book, but I mean, just the fact that people will give you that frown every now and then. I'm glad that you never had that, and I'm also happy to see that your buddy did the Breakfast Club at least once in his life. The popping it in between the textbook to.
Oh yes.
We've all done that at least once, and it's fun too, and educational in a different way than actually reading the textbook can be. I've had my moments of being a closet geek. They're not very prevalent. They don't really show up too often, but I certainly have had moments. Like, until it was brought up in the first relationship that I had with my first girlfriend, I didn't straight out say, I'm a huge comic book fan. Until it was brought up, like, what are you into? I mentioned, I like this sort of music. I like this sort of thing. Comics was the last thing to be brought up, because in my first relationship in high school, I didn't want this girl to think that I was some sort of quote-unquote nerd or geek at the time, but then I realized, what the hell am I doing? I wouldn't be going out with a girl if I didn't want her to know exactly, what I am.
Exactly.
And that's why eventually, I just straight up said, I'm into comic books. If you want to try and get into comic books, that's perfectly fine. As long as you accept the fact that, I go out there and I read my $20 worth a week or my $30 worth a week. It's my hobby, and that's the way it goes. And eventually, she did accept it. She did start reading a couple of comics, and that was well. With my past relationship, it was kind of hard for her to not know I was a geek, because I met her at an anime convention. So, right off the bat, I like comics. I like anime. I let her know. She wasn't a comic fan. She was an anime fan. But she did like manga, so that was sort of the bridge gapper there.
Cool.
But there, exactly. I got lucky on that part there. I mean, and that's why you should just go for geek girlfriends. Anyway, that's a different topic for another time. Anyway, the point remains that I've been sort of lucky, but there have been some instances where I've been sort of skeptical or afraid of revealing this to certain people. But then again, I'm looking for a job at Pokemon now. I'm not going to have to worry about that. But now, so have you ever had a friend, though, that was surprised that you were a comic book fan, David?
Maybe surprised in the sense that, they found a kindred spirit, but Nothing that would surprise somebody that, you'd also say, oh my God, you date elderly women. I mean, nothing really shocking or surprising. If anything, it was just that they were pleased to know that there was someone else out there like them. And for the most part, I mean, I have a couple of friends that may never have gotten into comic books, but that was never something that caused a rift or anything like that.
How about you, Peter?
Yeah, I think a few people here and there, especially every summer, mostly every summer, I work with a group that's the age range is 16 to 25-year-olds, this summer theatrical program, and every now and then I'll see a kid wear like a Green Lantern shirt or somebody else wearing a Spider-Man shirt, and I'll go up and I'll say, do you like that? Did you see the movie? Do you read the comics? And I go, oh yeah, I collect them too. And then that's when they notice that I wear my Superman ring, and they will go, oh, you read comics? Wow, that's cool. I'm like, yeah. So I've had that moment in a good way. I'm sure I've had it in the other way, too. I just can't remember, or I put it out of my head because I probably didn't respect that person to begin with. So,
and respected him even less after that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess I should have started off with, I didn't go back like David did, but my uncle was the one who gave me his box of comics when I was young. And I was like, I thought that was the coolest thing, that my older uncle, the one that I really liked, he read comics and got me into it, and I was like, cool. And then in junior high, I also had a group of friends that we would read comics and get comics together. It really wasn't until high school and college where that's where it kind of slipped away from me a little bit. You know, I had nobody to associate with, so it was kind of like, well, I'll just read it myself. And then that's when I think it all started to set in about, the less I bring it up, the better, probably. So.
Well, I can tell you that I survived a summer working with 13-year-old boys at a sleepaway camp because I read comics. I will straight up say this because, I mean, I was the – you know how when you're at a sleepaway camp, there's the nice guy and then there's the, you know, the toughie, as it were. You know, I was sort of the rules guy when it came to the bunk. You know, I'd be the guy who's trying to, you know, corral people and try to stop them from, you know, climbing up the walls, while the other guys would be, you know, the friendly, happy guys. That's the way that worked. But again, that's the way that happens in every single situation in life. Sleepaway camps were no different. When I got my first shipment of comics to the camp, when my parents were gracious enough, as was my girlfriend at the time, to go to the comic book shop to pick up my weeklies for me. So I had about 4 weeks' worth of comics that came to the camp at one time. And trust me, my eyes were so happy that day. I was like, oh, finally, things to read again, yay. But as soon as they saw those comics, like right away... One guy in particular, this one kid who probably had the least friends out of anybody in the group, came up to me with wide eyes and said, "Can I read one of those?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And he got to reading it. And then the next guy in the bunk came up to me and said, "Hey, are you done reading that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, go ahead. You can read that." And it just went from there until the point where everybody in the bunk was reading a comic at that particular moment. And I knew, that's it. I'm in.
Cool.
I have my moment here, and I know that actually that I ended that summer by giving a copy of Superman Batman number 1 and a copy of something else at the time. I forget what the other comic was, but to this one particular kid that first came up to me in the first place, because he really took to the comics, and he was the guy who kept coming back every single week. And I hope that I, you know, at least led him down a path of, you know, maybe following comics in the future. But it was nice to sort of bond with a guy who I was with the entire summer, making sure that he had well-being. I sort of bonded with him over comics. So that's my success story when it comes to comics, as it were. And I'm sure that we all have at least one of those.
You know, I always say that that's how you get new readers. You know, whether it's a parent or an older mentor or whatever. I mean, I look at Maxim Glory's kids, and he's always talking about he'll turn around and see one of his kids reading a showcase or something like that. And, you know, to me, that's sort of how it happened with me, with my uncle. And I have two nephews that every now and then I'll give them some Batman or Marvel Adventures Spider-Man or just a regular Spider-Man book. And I think that's important because they're seeing that you think it's important and you respect the comics and you are who you are even though you read comics. So it sort of, I think, helps them along too.
Yeah, and it also sort of says, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. I mean, you can like whatever you want to like. It doesn't make you different. You're into one specific genre, and that's the way it goes. You know, we're into comics. Other people are into other things. It's nothing to frown upon.
Right, right.
Definitely. Now, when it comes to being in a relationship, have you ever cringed when a spouse or somebody that you were in a relationship, you know, brought it up to certain friends when you weren't exactly expecting the conversation to go that route? I mean, Peter, has that ever really happened to you at all? Or
Yeah, that happened. That happened a few times. My freshman year, I had a friend I had a huge crush on, and she would. One day, I don't even know why, but I finally got up the courage to show her, like most comic fans, you know, you draw and you make up your own characters and things like that. So I showed her these things, and she absolutely was, like, so cool about it, and she made me draw her a whole bunch of stuff, and that was neat. And then my senior year, and after my senior year of college, I dated a girl from about a year and 8 months, and I don't think she knew at all that I read comics. I don't know how I... It almost wasn't even like it was a conscious thing that I hid it from her. It just, some reason, never came up, and it's weird. I mean, you think it would. You spend time with each other in each other's apartments, but it never did. And then I dated my last girlfriend that I dated for 6 years. she knew about it. She would never really read it, but she certainly accepted it, and we would go see all the superhero movies and things like that. But every now and then, she'd bring over some friends of hers, and either they saw a poster or they saw my bookshelf, and there was just something about it that you could see that, in their eyes, it wasn't something that was normal, for lack of a better word. And, you know, I brush it off. I'm kind of a cynical bastard at times, so I was kind of like, eh, you know, I don't care what you think.
Well, exactly, because you know what? If you take too much into, you know, what other people think, you'll be looking around every corner.
Yeah.
And, well, quite frankly, it's not too good to be too paranoid like that. David, how about you? I mean, have people brought it up and you've cringed at all?
Probably the only times is if they the only time I might cringe is if the only experience they have from anything related to comic books would be like the movies. It would be just something or a TV show or the old, you know, like if you mention Spider-Man and they bring up the, you know, the 1970s Nicholas Hammond TV movies with, you know, the shooters on the outside of the wrist and the belt and the goggles, and they're like, oh God, you know, that Spider-Man, and you try to explain that, you know, Spider-Man was around for a few years before that movie and he's been around a hell of a lot longer since, and, you know, it's just a whole different world out there than what they might think. You know, they may not know that League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is based on a comic book, and you try to explain, and even though that movie was horrendous, and you try to explain how good the comic might be, but they don't want to hear about it. And, you know, I don't know if I cringe so much as I get frustrated sometimes is the way people perceive just, you know, what comic books or comic book fans are like.
I can't believe that. I've actually met a few people that after I told them that, you know, something, a specific movie that they were into, you know, happened to be based on a comic, or a specific cartoon that they were watching happened to be based on a comic, I've actually seen them, I can't believe they actually did this, like it less. That's happened a couple times. Like, oh, that's a comic book? But it seems so good. You know, and I have to explain to them, yes, comic books can be good things. You know, I mean, there is such a thing as a good comic book. I mean, I'll give you an example there. There was a movie that came out, Road to Perdition. There we go.
Yep.
Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. I have had to explain to so many folks that Road to Perdition, you know, is based on a, you know, a graphic novel, is based on, you know, a comic book, as it were, and their jaws drop. Like, wow, I would totally never expect that to be a comic book.
Right.
And I literally, at least three people that I've told that to have sort of shrugged it off and said, oh, well, that's the exception. I'm like, the exception. Did you like Sin City? Did you go to see Sin City? That's based on a comic book. Did you go see this? Did you go see that? And it's sort of like there's almost like this hidden world that so many people don't know about on a lot of the things that they probably go and see every single summer that they really just don't know about or don't want to know about.
Right.
When you talk about the perception, I think it's more, I don't know if it's our responsibility, I don't know whose responsibility it is, but I think the perception of comic books needs to change before we get into all these ratings and censorship and things like that. It's almost like if people were more educated about the content of comic books and it would move away from just being, oh, well, comics are for kids. I think it would start to be appreciated more, because nothing infuriates me more than when somebody's a fan of the movies and all of a sudden they think they're a fan of comics or superheroes, and it's like, well, no, you're just jumping on the train late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is sort of like, well, just to relate this to sports, since that's my other love, as it were, like all those folks that all of a sudden were Yankee fans after the Yankees won the 96 World Series.
Sure.
Yeah, everybody started walking around with their Yankee jersey, and then, you know, as soon as the Braves won something, you know, they were wearing their Braves uniform. Now that the Mets are winning, you wouldn't believe how many folks who would not normally be caught dead wearing a Mets jersey are walking around New York wearing Mets jerseys. You know, that's the way it goes. Similarly, as soon as Spider-Man the movie came out, all these folks were all of a sudden wearing Spider-Man merchandise.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, they weren't going out and buying the comics, but, hey, it's in, so I'm going to go walk around and wear it.
I guess if it makes their perception of comic book readers better or not as derogatory, then I guess it is doing something. But, you know, when you brought up that sports thing, it makes me laugh when people who are really into sports look down on comics. You know, when you think about... I think about my stepdad, huge Eagles fan, and he would, when they were, I don't even remember what year it was, but it was not anything recent, but he would wear his Eagle sweatpants and wear his Eagle socks and wear his Eagle shirt and wear his Eagle sweater on top of that. And I'm looking at him, I think about it now, and I'm like, yeah, he was cosplaying, you know. And or all this fantasy football and fantasy baseball, yeah, that's role-playing. They're geeks. They just don't know it. They think just because it's a sports or there's something more macho about sports, I don't know. But, you know, personally, I think there's more TNA in comics than there are in sports. But,
well, sure.
You know, but it's like, you realize that you are basically absorbed into your hobby just as much as we are in ours.
I would certainly agree with that also. I mean, all I have to do is think about, you know, all those guys who, you know, go shirtless to the game and write, you know, like Yankees across their belly and stuff like that. And then I think of the guys who, you know, go to comic conventions wearing the Captain America jersey. How different are you?
Not at all.
Seriously. Not at all. And come on, I'll admit this. I used to actually role play wrestling when I was younger, because I was really into the WWF and all that. I used to role-play wrestling, and there were a whole bunch of role-players involved with that. And I'm thinking to myself, this could so easily be, you know, Dungeons and Dragons or something like that. But no, because it's wrestling, people are probably thinking in their heads, at least some people are, well, at least I'm not doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'm like, no, you're doing a different version of that. That doesn't make it any different in the end, you know? It's just a different part of culture. It's a subculture.
Right.
Just like comic books. Now, what about the folks out there who believe that comic books are nothing but a bunch of, you know, skimpy women in short outfits and all that, and, you know, men with giant bulges and all that? There's no substance to it, because I've found many a friend who has experienced that. That's why, actually, my first girlfriend, she was only into certain comic books, only the ones that were quote-unquote realistic-looking, like Chinna Cluxton's Blue Monday. Hmm. I'll give you an example there. She was really into that because they looked like real people, as opposed to, say, Wonder Woman with her giant bust and somehow it never falls off. You know, that's sort of magic there. Like she's got to have the magic glue on there, that no wardrobe malfunction happening with Diana, you know, even though in real life that would happen in a second. I mean, there are plenty of people out there who just believe all comic books are TNA. I mean, what would you say to that, David?
Well, those are the ones that are just clueless. I mean, it'd be the same as if I were to, I don't know, talk out of my ass when it comes to, you know, car engines. I know very little about that, so I wouldn't even attempt to talk about something like that. And the fact that these people, just either because they think this entertainment form or this medium is beneath them or just inconsequential, that they can BS their way through whatever conversation you're having because they might have seen Lou Ferrigno on a TV show or you know, just something like that, and they think that, well, obviously, you know, there's not much involved in comic books. I can you know, BS my way through this the same way I could tell somebody I'm a race car driver or a doctor. I can't. As soon as those types of people open their mouth, I just lose all respect, and I kind of just zone them out at that point.
Which is probably a good idea, actually. And they're everywhere, though.
Yeah, they are. They are.
I will say, I mean, it. You know, we all know there are certain comics that don't help the situation. I guess I can put it lightly. We, you know, there's a certain line of comics and certain cover artists or cheesecake artists that don't help the situation. But on the flip side of that, I mean, it's almost like a, I don't know, sort of like a tool to bring readers in. I mean, just like every sports event has beer commercials and car commercials, comics has that factor that is looking to draw a certain crowd in, and sure enough, it does. Otherwise, why would they keep putting out swimsuit issues You know, it is, I think it's part of the comics industry. It doesn't mean that it needs to be generalized that way, but it's just one of the tools that they use to bring in people who, because let's face it, I mean, you know, this stereotypes are there because there's a kernel of truth to them, you know, so
yeah.
There is a stereotype to comic book fans, and we've certainly met them at conventions, and so if they enjoy that kind of thing, then that's what they enjoy, and that's how they get into comics, and you certainly can't hide the fact that that's part of the comic industry.
And I'd like to say that, you know, the three people that are currently on this podcast right now are proof that not everybody is, you know, the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Right.
That there are folks out there who actually have lives outside of the world of comic books and don't just buy them for the skimpy outfits, and at the same time, there might very well be a story attached to that skimpy outfit. I mean, Power Girl, we know that she has ginormous breasts. We know that by now. But the fact that they actually try and put a story to it these days actually made me kind of happy. Seeing that Geoff Johns is working in reasons as to why she has that cutout there for no reason whatsoever in her outfit. Seeing that, you know, that Wonder Woman has made comments in the past, or people have made comments inside of Wonder Woman books about her, you know, looking a bit skimpy. But the fact that some writers take the time to explain why they look like that makes me happy. And when you try to then explain that storyline to some people, they sort of understand it. Other people, you know, they're too close-minded to believe it, but I have had some folks where I was able to sort of convince them that it's not just what it's all about, and that's what matters. If there's writing to go along with the art, then right away we win.
Right.
And that's a whole other topic, women in comics, but I mean, if you can believe, or if you easily accept that Superman can fly, I think we sort of get a little too in our head about some of these things, you know?
And yeah.
These are people who are flying and have heat vision and walking through walls. And sometimes you got to step back and go, well, they are sometimes just comic books. Sometimes.
And, yeah, no, sometimes, of course they are. And at the same time, there are comic books that are more realistic, that are more up the alley of, say, you know, somebody who might read, might watch 24 every single week. You might want to direct them towards an espionage comic, or guys who sit in front of the TV, or girls who sit in front of the TV and read soap operas every single week. You might want to point them over to a romance comic. The list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. There's so many different genres inside of comic books that are similar to the sort of genres you might find on the television that it's not something that's so close-minded where that's all you can find is superhero comics. There's plenty of stuff out there for plenty of different people. And certainly more so today than there were in, say, at least in my opinion at least, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it's sort of more today, more of a diversity than it once was.
Right.
Which is, again, it takes some getting used to. It takes some, you know, recognition to realize that there are other comic books out there, but there certainly are. And that's part of it.
It's also, I mean, comics are obviously a visual medium, so it's when it comes to, and comics are better written today than they were ages ago, but because it is a visual medium, it might take, you know, somebody might not believe the fact that they are written more intelligently or just however you want to phrase it, but when I think it, while I'm not thrilled with the fact that, you know, certain Hollywood writers will come in, write two issues of a 6 or 7 issue arc and then disappear for a couple of months because they got to go where the bread and butter lies, I'm not real fond of that whole concept. But if, you know, Hineberg, Eric Jerome Dickey, Stephen King, the guy writing Ultimate Hulk vs. Wolverine, is it Lindorf? Yeah, if you know, if these guys can help bring readers or bring more recognition to the hobby, to the industry, then that will probably help and not give people the conception that, you know, the comics are just for kids. Because, I mean, if you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people in this country that have a bookcase with more than 2 or 3 Stephen King novels, and if you tell them that one of his novels is being made into a Marvel comic, they might give you a look like, oh, really? And they might just go pick that up, and therefore they might realize that, well, being a comic geek really ain't that bad of a deal.
Mm-hmm. I'd certainly agree with that, and I'd say that it's been more so in the past, you know, 5 or 10 years or so, that this, you know, this differentiation between the different genres has become less and less. The fact that TV writers can write comics, that comic book writers can write TV. I mean, just think about Jeff Loeb. Jeff Loeb has made a major impact on the world of television, which sort of says that there's more crossover these days than there used to be.
All right.
You all saw Four-Year-Old Virgin. There's that scene where he's in his bed and he's laughing at a comic book, and it's a Marvel team-up comic book. And my family and I were sitting there watching this, and he's chuckling away at this comic. And I turned to them and I said, I have that comic. And, you know, we all just we all started laughing. But it was, I look at it and I go, oh, man, you know, it's always the comic books. I always, even that issue wasn't that funny that he was laughing at. But the whole point was, you know, oh yeah, Corey, it's a comic, so they got to poke fun at it. But on the flip side, there's shows like, I don't watch it, but there's shows like The OC, or obviously Smallville that I do watch, and so does all my family. And it's, the acceptance is hopefully if it gets more and more into the pop culture mind and more into people's vision, either on TV or in Entertainment Weekly or whatever, it's a slow crawl, but it'll happen.
Hey, I gotta say, I shed a tear when he was getting rid of all of his toys and memorabilia and 4-year-old virgin. It's like, no, how could you do that? It's still in the box. It's in mint condition. Don't sell it to eBay. No. And also, I recently watched Unbreakable for the first time. And two movies, actually, Free Enterprise and Unbreakable, where there are scenes inside the comic shop where I'm like, okay, have it, don't have it, mm-hmm. have it, as they're walking through the, you know, the rack of comic books. And I know I'm probably the only one who's sitting there watching it at the same time going, okay, yeah, I have that one, oh, yeah, I remember that one, and so on and so forth. But the fact that they can appeal to different people at the same time and that comic fans might get a reference that other people won't, but it's not going to stop people from going to see the movie or watching the TV. That's good.
Did you ever see Lost Boys?
Yes.
Haven't seen it, but David has, yeah.
Yeah, just that whole scene where they're on the boardwalk and he's talking about comics, even though the comics that he's picking up have nothing to do with what he's actually talking about.
Right.
There's that scene, and then there's that scene in Catch Me If You Can, Spielberg's movie with Hanks,
yeah.
And, you know, where he says, where he talked about Barry Allen. It was all these
yes.
little, that was great. I was like, I'm probably the only one in this movie theater that gets this.
Oh, man. Well, that's why I'm glad I watched Unbreakable for the first time with a comic book fan, actually, because both of us were sort of like, hey, wow, they used Marvel comics, but they had to make up the DC comics. Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting. And, you know, looking at the quote-unquote active comics, I believe that's what they called the Superman comic, you know, Active Comics number one it was, and Century instead of Superman. Oh, man, that was great. And at the same time, I'm like, okay, that was this cover, but it's, you know, not that. But other people are just going to sit down and watch an M. Night Shyamalan. I think Heroes is going to do a good job of bridging the gap, actually. I'm sure that both of you probably haven't seen that yet, but I was one of the guys who was lucky enough to get a preview copy.
Cool.
And that is really going to be a good job of actually sort of bridging the gap even farther, because this is basically a comic book playing itself out on the small screen on TV, which is a wonderful thing to find, and that it's actually really well done. And I have a feeling it's probably going to be really big for NBC.
Very cool.
Exactly. So hopefully everybody will go and watch that once it comes out.
My sister, my sister actually asked me today. She goes, "Do you see that show that's coming out? It's about superheroes." And I was like, "Oh yeah, Heroes." And she goes, "Yeah, it looks kind of cool." So I was like, "Oh, look at that."
I think M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable might actually be one of the reasons why Heroes can even happen, actually, to me, because this is sort of like the natural extension of what would it be like if a superhero was actually going to happen in our world, and that's sort of pretty similar to the same sort of concept of Heroes, so it's nice to see that more of that's actually making it to the small screen these days.
Yeah.
And is Aquaman still the number one most downloaded on iTunes?
Really?
Yeah, it was there for a while. Yeah, the Aquaman pilot that they released on iTunes was the most downloaded video on iTunes for about 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow.
Which, you know, says the staying power of it. And I actually sort of hope CW realizes this and maybe comes out and maybe puts at least like 13 episodes out there for a mid-season replacement or something, because it's not 100% dead yet. It's still with them. They just haven't gone through with it yet, so who knows. How much does the media actually play into the thoughts that some people have when it comes to comic book fans? I mean, obviously, they've sort of been, they put it down for years. That's sort of changing now in the past 5 or 10 years or so, and that's why we've sort of seen a bit of a change in what people think of it. But just how much does the media play into this?
Well, it all depends on how slow of a news day it is, because if it was not a slow news day, then over 10 years ago, the death of Superman wouldn't have even been mentioned on the you know, the local news at 5:30. Somebody at the news station or the newspaper said, "Hey, did you see this story? They're going to kill Superman." And then everybody and their mother decides to go pick up on the story and go read the comic book. So the media can maybe, I think the media could be a huge benefit for the industry if it's done right. But I really don't know how many times they've actually helped and not mocked.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, either of you, if you... It's not media per se, but it's still on the TV. Who Wants to Be a Superhero?
I have, yeah.
What do you think of it?
you're chuckling, David, so why don't you give your...
No, I saw a few minutes of whatever episode was last week or so when they got rid of the one guy and made him into a villain. And I mean, it's, you know, Stan Lee's on TV, so that's never really too much of a bad thing. He's out there promoting it, and people know Stan Lee, and I believe that they associate him with comic books. So if he's on TV, or if they're promoting Stan Lee, then hopefully they're not thinking that, oh, this guy with the kids' comic books is on again. You know, I mean, I can only hope. So with him being out in the limelight, I don't think that's a bad thing. But considering the show that he's associated with this, the show itself is kind of hokey, and I want to say it pokes fun at what we all like, but at the same time, they're trying to make three-dimensional real people, some guy that you could see at the post office, into a superhero. So really, how could it not be hokey?
Yeah, and that's sort of the way that I'm looking at it. I mean, I think it's genuine fun to me, really. I mean, you can tell that they could have done a lot worse.
Yeah.
They could have made it a lot more hokey, or made it that these were all fat comic book nerds from the middle of nowhere who stand in front of their comic book shop for 2 hours before it opens up every Wednesday. Instead, they made it somewhat realistic looking people. There's one guy who's actually doing it, and this is his exact reason for being on the show, to make his daughter laugh.
That's
and
great.
That sort of, to me, is one of the things, like we talked about earlier. I mean, if you're going to make your daughter see, hey, you know, comic books can be really fun, she might very well start picking up comics someday. So a lot of these folks do have the right idea here. I'd say the worst thing about the show is the fact Stan Lee has a stripperella thing up behind him whenever he's on, but no, other than that, I mean, I'm actually really enjoying the show. I mean, again, it could be a lot worse, and that's why I've watched every single episode so far, and I'm kind of digging it.
What I found surprising was that, flipping through this month's previews, is that it's Dark Horse that's going to produce the one-shot comic of whoever does become the superhero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as far as I know, it's the only time that I can think of that Stan Lee's name has been attached to anything Dark Horse related. I mean, I still am a little surprised or astounded that he did what he did with the Just Imagine with DC, but I don't blame Marvel for really not wanting to do a one-shot on this, but at the same time, I'm surprised that it's Dark Horse of all companies.
Yeah, surprised, and at the same time, I'm not so surprised, because they do like their television properties.
Yes, they do.
At Dark Horse, they do.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and also, actually, I'd actually sort of like to see it continued past the one-shot. If it does well enough, I'd like to actually see somebody, you know, other than Stan Lee, you know, maybe get a Peter David or get a Dan Slott or something like that to get on there and write just a genuinely fun comic book to sort of continue the adventures of this character after that, to maybe sort of, at the same time, you know, please the comic book fans that want to get a good comic, and at the same time, the folks who maybe might have crossed over from watching it on the TV to the realm of comics, they get something that sort of draws them in. So, who knows?
Well, it might depend on which hero actually does end up winning whatever it is that they're winning.
That's true. That's true. Well, what's your take on all this, Peter?
I saw about a half hour's worth of the most recent one last week. Mm-hmm. I guess it was the second week in August. And I couldn't get past the obvious setup of it all. You know, they obviously don't have a running conversation with Stan Lee, sort of like in The Apprentice, like they would with, what's his head, you know?
Trump.
Trump, thank you.
Yeah.
And then Fat Mama, and then the one guy got booted off, and the other guy was like, went up to console him, and it just, I don't know. Maybe because I haven't seen it from the beginning, but I kind of turned it off pretty quick after a while, and I was like, well, you know, I don't think I really need to watch any more of that.
Fat Mama, I'm not even joking, Fat Mama gets her powers from donuts.
I saw that around her waist there.
And a lot of the, actually, you know what, they did a costume redesign about, I think it was 2 weeks back, the week before they introduced the supervillain. They did a costume redesign on a lot of the folks on the show, and the costume redesigns actually sort of made them even more comic book to me, because before then, they were the schlubbiest outfits you'd ever possibly want to see. You know, you could tell that they were hand-stitched and just sort of cobbled together at the last second, and they gave them, you know, sort of more comic bookish characters. and that certainly helped them out. But again, it does sort of depend on who finally does win it. And if Fat Mama wins, I'm actually sort of curious to see what the hell Stan Lee's going to do about writing a Fat Mama comic.
Yeah.
I want her to win. I'm sorry. Like, part of me sort of just latched onto that character for some reason. Could be the fact that I'm slightly overweight, but I don't know.
A lot of teenage kids compared themselves or looked toward the kinder spirit in Peter Parker, and Ian's got Fat Mama. So.
Oh my God! Well, I don't have her, thank God. I just think she's kind of cool, but that's another story for another time. I mean, do you feel that Sci-Fi Channel, you know, is just sort of having a fun time with this? They're not trying to do anything to make us comic book fans look bad. Well, I mean, what do you think on that aspect of it, Peter?
I think I can see where it's all in fun and they're kind of taking the whole reality show concept, which I'm not a fan of reality TV to begin with, but taking it and sort of poking fun at that aspect too. I think they're really poking fun at reality TV. But I think, again, I was very surprised by some of the reactions that I saw about the show, where people were really just digging it and just taking it for what it was, and maybe I was just trying to see too much into it. But at a time where, you know, we have all these great superhero movies, and you got Blade on TV and Smallville on TV and Heroes coming up, I guess every now and then you got to get past Catwoman and you got to get past Who Wants to Be a Superhero, you know what I mean? Or My Super Ex-Girlfriend or something like that, you know?
Catwoman never happened. Catwoman is a movie in some alternate reality. It never hit here. I have no idea what you're talking about.
But even with those three, you'll have some people who that's all they'll remember.
Yeah.
They won't remember Spider-Man, which is, I think, the best superhero franchise right now, and they'll remember Catwoman. That's kind of like, oh, we're so close, but then we have Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, well, at least everybody's sort of forgotten 80s Punisher and Nick Fury and all that.
True.
David Hasselhoff is Nick Fury. Oh, my dear God, what the hell were they thinking? You make Knight Rider into Nick Fury. There's just so many things inherently wrong with that picture right there. If there's one thing also about the Who Wants to Be a Superhero that I'm enjoying, when Stan gives him these challenges, he's giving them the challenges with the sort of typical superhero rules behind them, you know, like saving a person that's in a burning building, or stopping to help a little girl who's lost her mother, or not giving up your secret identity, or being in it for the right reasons also. I mean, he actually literally kicked a person off because she revealed through a hidden camera, she revealed that she's an amateur actress, and she seemed to be in it for all the wrong reasons. So he's, at the same time, looking for people who sort of embody that superhero characteristics that we've all grown to love over the years, and that much is sort of another reason why I feel like it's sort of in the right place, as opposed to sort of making us look like we're all Fat Mama.
Mm-hmm.
Stick one of those contestants in the middle of a bank robbery, and then we'll see who's actually in it. Then I'll watch that program.
Well, let's get that going, actually. So, bank robbers out there... No, okay, I kid. And besides, they're probably all done shooting by now anyway. But yeah. Now, when you've gone to conventions, and you've gone to dinner afterwards, and you're there with your bunch of friends and all that, or... Say, for example, you're in costume at the time, and you go out to dinner, and you still happen to be in your costume, and you're getting all the weird looks from everybody around there and all that. I mean, is that warranted, where if they, you know, they go up to you and they, you know, they crack a few jokes and sort of point and laugh at you, or is it just like, hey, 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 look at that guy and keep on going? Because that's the way that I think people should really just react to things like that. If, you know, if folks are at a convention and they happen to be in an outfit, just, you know, hey, he's in an outfit. I wonder what he's dressed up as. You know, they find out, they go off. Some people write that, other people are, wow, look at the idiot in the costume. Ha, 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 ha. And that's not the way I like to see things. But there are folks out there that think that way. I mean, what do you say to the folks out there who will go up to a person, you know, crack wise, when cracking wise is not really the thing that you should be doing?
Who wants to take that?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I mean... What's interesting about that, though, is, you know, when you're dealing with your friends, it's one thing, but now you're moving into the whole being in a whole, in a, not even in a social environment, but being in a public environment.
Yeah.
And the majority of people don't know how to behave when you're not in costume, or don't know how to stay in their mind their own business. I'm very cynical when it comes to public places like that. I think people are too interested in what everybody else is doing, or you know. So right then and there, I feel very emboldened, and if somebody would ever come up to me and say something like that, or I would see them across the table, I'm sorry, but that's when the Scorpio would kick in, and I'd have to do something about it or do something back, stoop to their level and just run with it, because people on that kind of public level, they don't know how to behave anyway, so it doesn't even matter if you're dressed up or not. If it's at a convention, it's a whole different story, because you're on your home base. Like any good superhero, that's where your power is, and all of a sudden it's just a bunch of geeks talking geekdom, and I think that's when everybody swims in it and you know, is all for one for all. I don't think there's any problem with it on that kind of turf.
Yeah. How about you, David?
No, I'm very same way as Peter. I mean, I'm a Virgo, not a Scorpio, but I would definitely definitely would back Peter up in that regard. And yeah, as far as the conventions go, I mean, that's your place to shine. So be it.
And you know what? I've met David twice now, I guess, right, Dave?
Yes.
I guess twice. Yeah. You don't want to mess with Dave.
Oh, Jesus.
He's from New York, man. He's I'm not saying you look tough. You just have that very cool, calm look, you know, and that presence and that aura that I get from you, that I just feel that has a hell of a temper or something behind there. I'm always like, ooh, I'm glad he's my friend.
Well, looks can be deceiving.
Hey, Peter,
okay.
Come on, man. I'm the Brooklyn boy, and you're going towards David with this. I'm
yeah.
Here, man,
sorry,
you know?
It doesn't hold up, Ian. I'm sorry.
Ah, damn it.
You know, I have to laugh. I do have to laugh that this whole conversation was kicked off from Braxton, because I met Braxton down in Charlotte, and he's, you know, from a guy to a guy, he's a great looking guy. And then I met his wife as well, and she's gorgeous. I mean, I'm
yes,
surprised.
Yeah,
he had this thing going on, you know, that he's only being able to accept it for the past 5 years, because from talking to him down there, he was asking me about finding something, and I can't remember what he was looking for, and his wife, and I'm pretty sure her name is Angela, said, well, why don't we go back to home and we'll call some comic shops or whatever. So she seemed very supportive of what he was doing, so I can see why he has blossomed out of the closet, you know.
Very cool.
To put it in technical terms.
But yes, the most important thing, don't mess with David Price.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He wears gold.
Hey, so that makes me either what, Mr. T or Luke Cage?
I don't know what it makes you, but I don't wear gold.
Oh, yeah, damn. So, okay.
I pity the fool.
You got to be really, I think, sure of yourself sometimes, I think, to wear gold. He wears it proudly, and he's there, man.
Well, I also don't want to piss off the wife, so that was a gift from her. So there you go.
Exactly. You don't want to ever piss off the person that you're with, because you never know if they have claws until it's too late.
Too true.
Now, the fact that, yet again, I mean, Braxton said, you know, in the past 5 years, he's come out of the geek closet, as it were. Is it because of the movies? Is it because of the sort of, you know, changing atmosphere, as it were, the fact that there's more even novelizations of comics these days, that he's able to come out of the closet? Is the media more supportive of us now than they were, say, 10, 15 years ago?
I think it's just something that finally just snaps. It's that whole, okay, you know what, I saw this, you know, whether it's Star Wars or the Spider-Man movie, or, you know, Michael Keaton as Batman, and you didn't, you know, and you were one of the few people that thought that the guy that played Mr. Mom could pull it off, and the hell with anybody who thought otherwise, and you really weren't going to take it anymore. So you have all these people bad-mouthing something that you either believe in, or you stand behind, or you really, really love. It's the same as if someone knocked on your mother. You know, you just, okay, that's it, and this is where I make my stand, this is what I believe in, this is what I love, and I'll take anybody on. So with Braxton, I don't know if it might have just been something where he finally said, well, this is who I am. I'm not going to fight it anymore. I'm not going to just, you either accept me like this, or he could have had a heart-to-heart with his wife or his loved ones and just said, listen, I'm kind of embarrassed. I'm a little shy about this, but I really like this stuff. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I could walk into the office singing the Animaniacs theme song, and from one person I might get looks, but from the other people in my office, they'll just be like, oh, okay, David's here. You know, so it's just... It's either something that just snapped in your head, or it's, you know, somehow something got accepted, and I don't know. I think for really that if there's something there that you just believe in, then more power to you.
Yeah, you know, I the minute you said snapped in your head, David, I it suddenly dawned on me when this whole thing for me happened, and not to get all mushy or whatever, but. When I moved back to my hometown after this huge breakup I had with the girl that I dated for 6 years, and this was well before the podcast too. It was Kevin and Shane and Brian and Jamie and Matt. It was all those guys on the show with me that Kevin and Shane helped me move out of New York. Kevin, we went to go see The Incredibles in the movie theater. He said, "Come on, we're going to the movie theater." And at the time, I was like, "No, I don't have any money." He goes, "No, you're going." It was all these guys who kind of took me, who because I was living in New York at the time and I hadn't seen him for a long time. They all took me in and they were like, "Come on, we're going to do these things." And I'd go out to dinner. We did this, and then we'd have our annual Christmas dinner. And that's when I stopped and I said to myself, "You know what? That old adage is true. Your friends and your family are always going to be there." And, and that's when it was like, "You know what? This is who I am." And I think I lost touch with that for the longest time, whether I was living for somebody else's career or I was trying too hard to focus on my career or whatever. I realized that's who I was. And that was 2004, I guess, the holiday season of 2004. So it wasn't even that long ago. So I think that's when it all kind of snapped into place.
You had your welcome back Cotter moment.
Yeah, I did. I really did.
Very cool.
Yes, and honestly, I can safely say that, I mean, I was sort of, you know, kind of comfortable with my geekdom, you know, before I first discovered podcasts, but when I discovered Comic Geek Speak, when I discovered the Comic Geek Speak forums, when I discovered the other podcasts out there, like Around Comics, and like I Read Comics, and all those other podcasts out there, I realized, hey, wait a minute, it's not just me. There's an entire community out there. Yeah. There's an entire bunch of people. It doesn't have to be my neighbor. It doesn't have to be a guy down the street from me in Brooklyn. It can be a guy in Arizona. It could be a guy in Cleveland. It could be a guy in Ohio. It could be a girl in London. It could be a girl in freaking Africa. I mean, it could be absolutely anybody who is into comic books. The internet has been such a help with me coming to terms to realize that there's other guys out there. It's not just you. You can strike up a conversation with anybody anytime, and as long as they're friendly, then you're good. And it's such a welcome, warm community on the forums that was certainly one of the reasons why I even wanted to do a comic podcast in the first place, or a podcast period, because, hey, people want to talk. People want to hear what other people say, and it's really done a great job of other people realizing that you're not alone, and that really matters.
Yeah. I mentioned this last weekend that it, you know, it used to be you'd go to the convention, and if you weren't going with your friends and, you know, you just decided to go to the convention on, you know, on that Saturday, and you got in your car, you got on the train and you went to the convention, and, you know, you were surrounded by people that were there for the same reason you were, but you may not have known anybody. You know, you may have just made eye contact with the dealers or what have you, kept your head down, didn't want to bother with anybody, didn't want to look up at the guy dressed up like Superman or anything. But then, you know, now that we have all these podcasts and CGS has a booth in Artist Alley, and you have your listeners coming up to you and introducing themselves, or even those that you've seen at the other cons or at other recordings, and it's just... there are people are actually and other cliques might have gotten together before podcasts. You know, if you had everybody who wrote to Fantastic Four, you know, and then they just said, okay, we're going to be in this corner from like 2 to 4, come over there, you might have been able to see them. But this whole interactive community is just as has made cons and I think being a geek a lot more fun, a lot more accepting, and it really is. It's a great time to be a geek.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, Dave, and both of you, I'm sure you've had a moment where somebody comes up where they listen to your show or they've heard you on a show, and do you ever get that feeling that they know you more than you know them, but it's because, you know, we've decided to put ourselves out there as podcasters and on the forum and things like that, and that blows my mind.
Yeah.
And it's so cool that it's an instant friend kind of thing. I mean,
yeah.
I've seen David twice. I've seen Vince B three times. You know, I've seen...
I'm sorry.
I've seen Sean Whalen, you know, Ian. I've seen you a handful. So it's like, it's amazing that in just the short amount of physical time together, the connections that we've made. And you know what? That strong and proud, you know, we all go into it together and we'll all die together.
Yeah.
This isn't a cult, man. I mean, we're not all going to drink the same Kool-Aid.
I'm drinking
man.
The Kool-Aid, babe.
Hell yeah.
I'm wearing the sneakers.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. Hey, well, I mean, I can safely say also that, I mean, it was because of the Comic Geek Speak episode 100 that I met this son of a gun, David Price, and that I met
Yeah, we
Sean.
Can blame Bruce for that.
Exactly. Yeah, Bruce taking the time and the effort, Bruce Rosenberg of Comics Cast, you know, taking the time and the effort to help us get a lift over to the mall and being there for that, and getting to meet Sean also, because Sean literally was my first person who, you know, came up to me and said, "Hey, I love your show, you know, I love listening to you all the time," and I'm like, this feels kind of weird,
cool.
But at the same time, it's like, this feels kind of awesome. So, you know, I mean, actually meeting the listeners and all that, and just meeting people that I know, but have never met.
Yeah.
That is totally awesome. Knowing somebody and talking to somebody and then finally meeting them in real life. It's like, you don't even need to introduce yourself because you've introduced yourself so many times already that you can just strike up a conversation and you're home. That's it. That's what being a geek, that's what being a comic geek is. That's what having friends is all about. And we're all friends here. So that's what's important.
Very
group
true.
Hug. Group hug.
Aw,
yeah. Shucks. Over the internet, we're having a group hug right now. The first recorded group hug over the internet has happened here on Comic Timing, episode number 14. Let it come down into the record books, folks. That'll be a Guinness Book of World Records right there. All right. Any final thoughts here on the world of geekdom before we wrap things up here?
Wear it proudly. Ain't no shame.
Let that geek flag fly.
I agree.
Yeah. And also, I got to say, also, in the past 5 years, there's also one other thing that I got to mention here before we wrap it up. I've had so many more people come up to me and say, "Dude, I love your shirt." So many more folks coming up to me and saying, you know, like, "Oh, wow, yeah, hey, wow, I really dig that Spider-Man shirt," or "Wow, that's a really awesome Batman shirt." And even people who don't know comics, I actually had one person ask me, "Is that Jim Lee?" And I'm like, "How do you know?"
Wow.
And he said, I think the Times covered something on that run once upon a time. And, you know, he's like, "Wow, I totally know that image." And I'm like, "Okay, wow, that's really, really awesome at the same time as, you know, kind of frightening." But that's something that also the fact that the movies have helped out with that. And also, it's not nearly as weird anymore to wear those comic book shirts,
right?
You know, or those geek shirts, because it's just sort of, "Hey, cool, you're wearing a shirt. That's awesome. Wow, that's a really nice picture." And then people move on. You don't stand out in the crowd anymore for wearing a Captain America shirt.
I don't have any... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I don't have any superhero ties that I wear to work, but I do have a Lion King tie that I absolutely love, and I have absolutely no problem wearing that out. Or actually, my father borrowed it for the longest time, and I finally had to steal it back from him.
Have you had people comment on your wardrobe before, Peter?
Well, what I was going to say was my 13, or no, she's actually 15 now. My 15-year-old niece calls me the biggest nerd, but yet she went to go see X-Men and Superman and all that, Batman. She goes to Hot Topic, and every now and then I'll see her with an old-style Batgirl shirt, with the old with the old Batgirl logo and the Barbara Gordon head and things like that, and you know, so it's in pop culture.
Oh yeah, I think my father went to go see Superman Returns. He went to go see Batman Begins last year. He's seen all the Star Wars in the theaters. The only one I didn't see was Episode III. He's been to the movies to see more comic related movies than I have in the past few years. And wow. And he'll listen to the show. He'll ask me. You know, I mean, he doesn't read the comics, but he's I think Spider-Man's one of his favorite characters. So I mean, he knows where these characters came from. He enjoyed the Look Up in the Sky documentary that A&E put out in conjunction with the Superman Returns movie. So he's aware. He knows what his son likes. He knows what his son gets a kick out of. So I know I wasn't going to, you know, there was no worry of me living in a household where it was going to become some Twisted Sister video when the guy asked, what do you want to do with your life?
Oh, man.
Now we'll see how many listeners over the age of 15 actually knows that reference.
Yeah.
Oh, that is beautiful, man. Twisted Sister reference on the podcast. You just scored some points, period.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And while we're in all this conversation, I am single, as Ian mentioned early on, and not actively looking, but certainly wouldn't turn anything down, so.
And actually, I am single as well.
There we go.
So, recently single. So, any of you comic book girls out there who want to approach us, you know where to find us. Go to the Comic Timing forums. Go to the Comic Geek Speak forums. We're there often. There you go.
Post your pictures.
Yeah.
I'm not that scary in real life.
No, he's not. Actually, he's not. He's quite fetching.
Oh, thanks.
Don't take this the wrong way, Peter. But you're a cuddly teddy bear.
Oh.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I'm going to have a special guest join us here for a quick moment as we are about to announce something. And actually, yes, he is here right now. Drew is joining us right now. Drew M. from the forums. Drew, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Hey, Drew.
Pretty damn good. You're joined here by David Price and Peter Rios. So, hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Now, we are announcing something, and that's why I wanted you to be in on this call.
Okay.
We are about to announce the winner of our iTunes Arch contest, and congratulations, Drew, you are it.
Ooh.
That's yes.
We had a contest, for those of you who don't know, we had a contest that ran until early August to create some iTunes art for Comic Timing, and Drew created this really awesome masked figure with a really, really nice Comic Timing logo on it. And
I got I love the coloring.
Yeah, that's what basically no pun intended, drew me to it as well. And well, dude, congratulations, you are the winner. So as of this episode, this will be our art in iTunes.
Awesome.
Yay.
Yes. Yay. And let me take this moment and this opportunity to also state that, Drew, in the future, I'll probably be contacting you to be on this show a little more often.
Okay.
All right. So just wanted to get that for you there. And if you can, shoot me a PM on the forums to get your address and all that. And Wally is going to be sending me over the posters. In fact, I got to remind him about that as soon as we're done here. And we will hopefully have that to you in the next couple of weeks. So you're going to win a couple of X-Men 3 mini posters for being a part of the contest. So congratulations, buddy.
Mm-hmm, thanks.
No problemo. All right. So let me just congratulate you on that one last time, and we'll talk to you later, Drew.
Okay. You want me?
All right. All right. Well, there we go. That was a bit quick there.
Yeah.
But, nevertheless, Drew is the winner here, so Drew M. will be getting his accolades. And before we wrap things up, David, I believe you have an announcement for everybody.
I don't know about for everybody. I just wanted to let you know that I will be stepping down to work on something else that I'm not going to get into detail about just yet, but you'll be hearing me again soon, just not on Comic Timing for the foreseeable future.
Yes, and you'll be there for at least one more episode, however, as probably next week, if not the week after that, we'll be having our 22 pages for Annihilation number 1. And that will probably be the last one for a little while. However, you will show up every now and then because, well, you are the Man of 1,000 podcasts. You have to let yourself be around, buddy.
I don't know how the hell that happened.
What happened, man, is that you were on every single podcast.
That's something else we can blame Bruce Rosenberger for.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, indeed. Well, first of all, let me just say this. I mean, even though, we, like I said, it'll be far from your last appearance on Comic Timing, it's been really fun having you as my co-host for the past, well, yeah, literally you've been on 13 out of the 14 episodes, so it's been a pleasure to be able to talk to you as often as I have, David.
I've had a blast.
You'll still be around, and I'll certainly be listening to your new venture once it's announced.
Yes, yes. It's all about Easy Bake Ovens and Barbie clothes.
I knew it.
So make sure, you know, you clear space on your iPod for that.
Excellent. And the Easy Bake Oven podcast will hopefully be premiering sometime soon. So.
Hopefully.
And at the same time, if you want to pop on the podcast to actually announce that, I'll be more than happy to do so once you do have everything, you know, confirmed, if you want to take a quick pop in. And meanwhile, Peter, what's upcoming for Comic Geek Speak?
When does this episode air?
This one's probably going to be released no later than Thursday.
Of this week?
Of this week.
Okay. No later than Thursday, then we're going to do a special Friday episode of this week. It's going to be a regular numbered episode, but it will be a major departure from the usual format of our show. Simon Oliver of Exterminators, has been making the podcast round, and he's really having a push to get the word out for Exterminators. So it was sort of last minute, sort of not last minute, but it's going to be a one-on-one interview with myself and Simon Oliver.
Excellent.
Wow.
That's great.
So that I'm looking forward to.
Good score.
It'll be Friday.
Excellent. Fantastic. Any other quick things you want to mention, or is that pretty much it for the foreseeable future?
Let's see. I'm trying to think of our recording schedule. Monday's episode, I believe, will be Frank Bedore from Looking Glass Wars and Hatter M. will be making a return to the show. And a couple episodes down the road, we'll be doing a Marcosia spotlight, Marcosia Publishing, with Chuck Satterley actually in studio. He lives in Allentown.
Ooh.
So he'll be coming down to join the show.
Beautiful.
Very nice. Excellent. And you guys are going to be at Baltimore, correct?
Yep. Who's going? Is Dave, Ian, are you heading down there?
I'm going to be there. I'm definitely going to be
cool.
There. Are you guys going to have a booth, or?
We're still working out the details on that. That's even at this late day. Maybe by the time actually this airs, I might have more information. But right now, I don't.
All right. Well, if you do have any extra information, make sure to pop it into the episode 14 thread on the Comic Timing forum, just to let people know.
Sounds good.
I will be at Baltimore, and also at the same time, I'll make this announcement on here one last time. Anybody who's looking to split the cost of a room, I have a room that's only a couple stops away on the White Line in Baltimore, so if you are looking for a place to stay, just send me an email over comictiming@gmail.com, and we will try and work that out. I've got a couple of people that might be on there. I actually got a let Jenny Breeden know again, because I know she mentioned that a couple episodes back, so I'll see whether or not she still wants to sort of be a part of that room experience, so that's awesome there. And other than that, I think that's pretty much it, so let me just go through the usuals as always. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Let me give the Comic Geek Speak address also, just in case people want to shush. Well, actually, you want to give your actual email address, Peter, or you want to do the Comic Geek Speak?
Sure. It's you can do comicgeekspeak@gmail.com.
Okay. So if you want to shoot Peter an email or the Comic Geek Speak guys, shoot him an email at comicgeekspeak@gmail.com, and obviously the podcast over at comicgeekspeak.com. The Comic Timing forums are located at comicgeekspeak.com/forum. It's the Comic Timing forum on there. Don't forget to send us your iTunes reviews on our iTunes page. And also, the previous entry has officially been deleted from iTunes. So there's only one entry for Comic Timing now, so it's not confusing anymore. It's the one that says David Price, Ian Levinstein on there. That's the one that you should be looking for. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. The link will be in the show notes and on the main page. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network, which is found over at comicspodcasts.com. Also, don't forget to check out The Furnace over at lordshaper.com. Lord Shaper is an affiliate of the show, and his new segment for the show will be premiering in about 2 weeks' time, and it's going to be focusing on villains, actually. and that will be premiering sometime soon, so Lord Shaper will pop on for the end of one of the shows. Might even have him on for the full one. Other than that, I think that's pretty much it, unless I'm forgetting something, which I don't think I am. Nevertheless, David, a pleasure as always.
Same here.
And Peter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys, and David, good luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. And like I said, next week's episode will be the 22 Pages Annihilation number 1. If anything comes up, I'll make sure to let you guys know. And we also have some more interviews in the pipe, so I will let you guys know about that as well. And hopefully I'll have them within the next couple of months. And as always, there's always time for comics. Like I said, David, once you do actually know exactly what's going on with the new podcast, make sure to just pop in for an episode, and you can pop in and out if you want, just to let everybody know what's up with that, because like I said, I am anxiously awaiting this, because I hate mystery.
Yeah, it's a whole big tease. I feel like I'm being teased.
And it's going to be such a letdown.
What? Are you going to do it with yourself in a mirror?
No, it's going to be all about Braille and sign language.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Oh, wow. So it would be the all silent episode.
Right, yeah, and then the show notes will probably be in Morse code.
You can name the show dot dot dot.
That's right.